Welcome back to Radio EcoShock.
Norway. Energy so clean, you can drink it. And that's why I'm here. And what I'm trying to find out is what will the energy transition look like for the rest of us.
This is Jerry Williams from Radio EcoShock. I'm welcoming into the studio Harry Lynch, who is the director of the film Switch, which premiered at the DC Environmental Film Festival on March 13. Switch is a film that explores all of the energy options that are facing us, talks about the pros and cons. So welcome, Harry Lynch.
Thank you, Jerry. I'm glad to be here.
The DC premiere last night. Tell me about that experience and, you know, the reaction of people in the audience.
That's right. We've had some preview screenings, but this was the official world premiere, actually. And it went great. The festival was fantastic. The screening sold out, and they had to turn away about 100 people. So it was totally full, and the response was...
Yeah, it's their 20th year, so this was a great way to premiere it. Well, energy is on everybody's mind, especially now with the gas prices going up. People are thinking about it more and more. Tell me why you made the film. What attracted you to the topic, and why now? You know, it took 2 years to make the film, so what were the factors that were going on that persuaded you to tackle this big topic?
Right. Well, it actually took 4 years all told to make the film. You know, energy is one of those things that I've always been really fascinated by, in part because I'm interested in all the technical parts of it, but also in part because it underpins kind of everything else in society, and people generally take it for granted. And I think as a filmmaker, anytime you can find something that has a great impact but is kind of unknown or not often thought about, it makes for a good subject. So for that reason, it's always been something I was interested in. So when Scott and I decided to make this, we were trying to figure out, you know, how do you talk about an energy transition? And you know, he's a scientist and I'm a filmmaker. And so I said, you know, okay, I think this is our angle. And he says, great, I've been studying our energy transition for 10 years and I have lots of awesome graphs and bar charts. I said, no graphs, no bar charts. And we can't do any – this is not a PowerPoint presentation. This is a film. And so we have to get out there and we have to actually explore it. And so that was our mission. It was basically to go all over the world to find the currently scalable energies where they're best in the world. So, for example, for geothermal, we went to Iceland. Iceland has – for hydro, we went to Norway. So we went to all the places where they do it best in the world to look at their system and determine, you know, how does that apply to the rest of us. Mm-hmm. A great subject and had some great visuals, so it seemed to make sense.
Now, this is Dr. Scott Tinker, who is a geologist, a professor. And what I found very interesting in the way that you showcased the film in the beginning was him packing to go to all these different places that eventually you visited. And the idea that he had in mind was to calculate the amount of energy that he used in getting from place to place, washing and drying his clothes, driving, all of the electronic gadgets that he used, all the gas that he used, and basically come up with a number to base on how much does the average person use. Now, of course, average being, you know, someone in a Western country would not be the same as an African.
Right. That is so, a global average.
It's a global average.
Yes. Mm-hmm. What we come up with is he basically starts to calculate his essentially energy footprint, the energy that goes in not just to the gasoline driving his car or the electricity powering his house, but that goes into all the products and all the food that he consumes.
The truck that brings him the Caesar salad 1,500 miles.
I mean, when you go to the grocery store, the grocery store is full of stuff that all was shipped from somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so you have to factor in all that. His share of heating and cooling government buildings, of building roads, of all the things that we all kind of use in our lives on a day-to-day basis. And so we add all that together. In the United States, it comes to 95 million watt hours per year per person. So an extraordinary amount. I mean, that 95 million doesn't really mean anything to somebody. It's a unit that doesn't necessarily mean anything. But we use the global average of 20 million watt hours, which is an enormous amount of energy.
It still is.
It's an enormous amount of energy. You know, the reason we use so much energy in the world is that people consume a lot of energy, and there's an awful lot of us. So, the issue of energy is scale, just how much energy we demand because there's so many of us.
Mm-hmm. So then he and you set out on this journey. You looked at 9 currently scalable sources of energy, and you were keeping in mind how much each source could provide or could go toward this to satisfying the energy needs of everyone on Earth, or?
So we measure everything that we visit in terms of the number of people that it would power in a year. So we took that 20 million watt hours and we basically divided the output of that facility by that. So instead of measuring all the things we're visiting by BTUs or some other strange physics or energy metric that people that might not mean anything to anybody, we measure them in people. And so that allows us to measure everything on a common unit, essentially. Mm-hmm. Now, all those things, they operate at different scales. Some of them are giant facilities. Some of them are a solar panel on your rooftop. So they're not intended to power the same amount of people, but it gives you an idea of how they compare.
Now, you visited some spectacular places. And one of the things that visually I think you revealed to the viewer is what you mentioned before, the scale of things. How much space, how big things have to be to provide us with energy. And so it takes just abstract ideas and really shows it on a physical scale, how much that's involved in. To some of these places, the mines and the deep water rigs and so forth, how did you work out permission to visit these sites?
Yeah, that was very hard. It was very difficult. I always like when people ask me that, because that's kind of like the heavy lifting of the producing work that never really gets mentioned. It was very hard. And, you know, a lot of it was getting into somewhere first allowed other people down the line to trust us and allow us in. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was very hard to get into coal facilities because, in general, coal facilities don't want to be filmed.
Why is that?
Well, just because there's generally a negative attitude towards coal right now. And so, you know, even if it's a well-run coal facility, you know, not mountaintop removal, but something more like one of the ones that we visit, they kind of figure they don't have anything to gain. They've got a lot to lose. And so they were very trepidatious. They didn't really want to let us in. But, you know, eventually you build trust. We kept telling everybody we're trying to do a balanced energy film. We're not trying to bash any one energy or promote really any other energy. We're trying to really show their pros and cons and challenges and how they all fit together in moving towards an energy, you know, future. You know, we interviewed the U.S. Undersecretary of Energy and the former U.S. Undersecretary of Energy. We interviewed all these CEOs of companies that were either on the fossil side or the renewable side. And so as we gradually built up our list of people we'd interviewed, these really high-level people in the energy world, they began to trust us. And so that's how we eventually, you know, got in. Some of those places were still very difficult to get. It took 6 months to get to the offshore platform. It took about 6 months to get into the nuclear facility in France.
You know, again, as a viewer, I was very interested in all of the different energy sources that you did go into very thoroughly, not only the common ones that we know, the fossil fuels, but getting into the electric car and literally getting into the electric car and also talking about the costs involved, because some of the newer technologies are going to be very expensive to scale up and have their own problems. Can you talk a little bit about the alternative energies that you looked at, the wind, the solar, and what, if anything, surprised you about what you found out about these alternative energies?
Well, I mean, we found that almost everything was surprising because, you know, my background in doing the research for the film was, you know, reading. And Scott's background as a scientist was largely technical. So his was a research kind of thing. So getting out into the field to see all these things, you know, the entire thing was surprising. So we learned an awful lot. But as far as what's surprising about renewables, geothermal in Iceland, I mean, the whole thing was spectacular. It's incredibly clean. You know, if you go into the power facility in Iceland, I mean, it's like a laboratory. And that's because the thing that powers it is steam. Only, you know, everywhere else we burn something to boil water to make steam to turn a turbine. And there they just have steam coming out of the ground. So it makes for a fantastic facility. I didn't realize quite how regionally limited that is. I mean, if we all had geothermal energy like that, it would be a very different world. But unfortunately, it's concentrated in a few places. You know, I went in as a giant proponent of solar and still am. The bigger you get in solar, the more you try to scale it up into industrial facilities, the harder it becomes to do that. It's very expensive to build. It's the most expensive energy form by far. And it also is fairly low power for that expense. And it is, you know, fairly inefficient. And so and it's intermittent. You know, when it's not sunny, like at night, you're not producing any power. So building expensive transmission lines out to these commercial scale solar facilities becomes difficult. So that was a surprise to me. I didn't really understand.
One of the approaches that the movie takes which I haven't ever seen before, is really talking about how all of these energy sources could potentially fit together to round out our energy picture going forward. And I'm not mistaken, Dr. Tinker says that that nuclear, fossil fuels, and alternatives are the mix that we need to concentrate on. Is this correct?
Well, I think he was saying that nuclear, natural gas, and renewables are what will, you know, taken all together, are what will transition us away for the from the higher carbon fuels of oil and coal, which have been the foundation of our energy system for 200 years. So that is essentially what he's saying. But, you know, it's a long, slow transition. I mean, we're kind of the scale of energy use, the scale of energy infrastructure, the inertia of the energy system all around the world makes things really slow to change. So we when we looked at all, a lot of countries, the average time to kind of get a new energy system off the ground and make it scalable and working at a meaningful scale was about 30 years. So if you go to Denmark, for example, they went from 0% wind to 20 or so percent wind, and it took them more than 30 years to do it. And that's pretty common. It's the same with Iceland. So it takes a long time for these things to change. And so that transition period is a fairly pretty slow one, but a consistent one. But if we do want to get ourselves off the highest carbon energy forms, which are coal in particular, and oil, it's going to take all the other energy forms to do that. And you know, they are all lower carbon. Interestingly, there's a guy we interviewed named Jesse Ossible, really smart guy. He didn't make the film, unfortunately, just because his interview didn't quite fit, but very smart. He's on our website. He made a point a few years ago that we have been in a gradual decarbonization, a natural decarbonization for more than a century. Basically, we went from wood, which if you're not going to replant the forest, is the highest carbon form, to coal, to oil, to natural gas. And he thinks eventually we're all headed to nuclear and hydrogen. That may be 100 years from now. But he says basically we've been on a gradual decarbonization naturally because it's generally an increase in energy density, which is where we're, you know, population is becoming more dense. Mm-hmm. Energy needs to become more dense.
Some of the places that you investigated that had successful energy transition, the ones you've mentioned, Iceland, Norway, other Scandinavian countries, all had extensive government involvement.
True.
And many of them were nationalized resources. Mm-hmm. I know that the film that Dr. Tinker does not recommend policy necessarily, but how can you actualize this change in a direction that is both cost effective and is going to protect the environment without a government role?
Mm-hmm.
If it's only dependent on people doing the right things and companies doing the right things.
Right, or market forces driving things. I mean, I think you absolutely do need a government role. I mean, the government is involved in energy everywhere. You know, energy is the largest industry in the world, $6 trillion of revenue every year, 40 or something trillion dollars of infrastructure in place at any time. So it's the largest industry in the world, underpins everything else. And therefore, government is always involved in it, in regulation, in taxing, in subsidies. I mean, we try not to advocate for policy. Some of the things we suggest in the film without also saying that we need a little bit of stronger government role to do that. The difference in our country compared to, say, some of the Scandinavian countries that you mentioned, they had a giant renewable resource, like one renewable resource. We're a much larger country. Those are countries of a few million. We're of 330 million. And we have a very diverse geography with very diverse regional sources. So it's harder for us. I mean, that's the reason why one of the reasons we don't have an energy policy. That would be a really good start. A cohesive national energy policy would be a great place to start.
Do you see any prospects that that would take place?
I hope so, but no, honestly, yeah. I hope so. It's too, in this country, it's too politically challenging. You know, everybody's on a short term and everybody's worried about not getting reelected. So
yes.
It takes a lot of political willpower and a lot of political capital. Nobody seems to have enough of one of those lately.
It does. And my fear is that also in a time of budget constraints, it's going to be the companies with the most dollars that will dominate the choices that we're going to go toward. Unless people become better informed. And that leads me to another part of your project, the whole project of which the film is a part. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a bit about, besides the film, what are the other things that the Switch Project is going to be involved in?
Well, you know, we like to call this a media project instead of really a film. The film is part of it. probably the most public part of it. So the website will have about six or more than 6 hours of edited video content. So it's edited to the same quality of the film. It's all color corrected, sound designed. It all looks beautiful. And it's all broken down into 1 to 3 minute bits. So it's kind of web ready. And you can playlist it in any order that you might want to. And you can drill down in any for any area of interest you might have. So if you want to know about concentrated solar, you can view just stuff about concentrated solar. You can put it in a playlist. You can stream it to your television or watch it on your iPad. And you can basically watch your own kind of movie about concentrated solar. And you can do that for any resource that we discover. A lot of the people that I mentioned, some of our interviewees, I mean, actually the, nearly the top level across the board from government to industry to academia, and many times the very top level. So we took all those interviews and we edited them down to their very best, say, 10 to 20 minutes, and then thumbnailed all those. If you want to spend a couple hours there, you could literally hear how energy is being driven today by all those people. You can't get that there anywhere else. So then there's an education program that also is available free via the website. That won't be out for about 10 months. But that is an elementary, middle, and high school video-based education program. So they're 20-minute kind of interactive video exercises that somebody, a teacher could play in the classroom. It would take half of a class period. And they could, you know, basically lead their students through a study of energy through that way.
And who's generating this curriculum?
We're co-developing that with the AGI, which is the American Geosciences Institute, which is a DC-based nonprofit. Everything you're doing for consumption in a school has to pass some kind of curriculum standards. Mm-hmm. So while we're creating the video content and trying to make it engaging and fun and snappy, they are making sure that the curriculum and the standards are met. And they have a group of teachers nationwide that they test things with. And so they'll be testing these programs with their teachers to be sure that it engages their kids and that it passes their standards. So the distribution model of the film is also pretty interesting. This is a film that basically, if you want to see it, you can have it. You can get it. It is an on-demand distribution model. So you go to our website, which is switchenergyproject.com. You can send us an email via that page. You can join the newsletter, and you can specifically request a screening. So if you're part of a university or a government agency or a nonprofit or a company, or if you just want to show it to your children's high school, you know, we can facilitate that. And it could be as simple as we send you a Blu-ray, or we have a theatrical distributor called TUGG, T-U-G-G, that's just announced, just released. And they can actually arrange it in a commercial theater near you, so you can see it on the big screen. So there's any number of ways to see this, but you can basically bring it to your group. And then it'll follow the regular, you know, there'll be some cable broadcast and Blu-ray release and all that stuff, Netflix, everything mm-hmm. like that. Yeah. Switchenergyproject.com.
What's next for you, Harry Lynch? You've been you've been to Norway, you've been on mountaintops, you've been in nuclear facilities, you've mm-hmm. been all over the place. So what's your next project?
Yeah. Well, one of the things we're really interested in that we kind of came up many times against in this project is water. In particular, when we interviewed the guy from the Environmental Defense Fund, he said, we're very interested in what we call the energy-water nexus, how much energy we use to produce water, purify processed water, how much water we use, which is a lot, to make energy, and how those two things fit together. So possibly something on that. The other thing is, you know, the reason we use so much energy is because there's so many of us. So we're talking about maybe a film on population. There have been a few, but we have some other angles, some new angles. Mm-hmm. And then a 6-part miniseries on mental illness.
Fascinating. We'll look forward to more of your productions.
Thank you.
Harry Lynch, director of Switch, which had its world premiere at the DC Environmental Film Festival in March. It is a comprehensive survey of energy choices, fast-paced, stunning visuals, and with the point of view that will generate discussion. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
From the Washington, D.C. studio of WPFW Pacifica Radio, that was Radio EcoShock correspondent Jerry Williams. I'm Alex Smith. Jerry and I want to add one caution about this film, Switch. The filmmakers seem to take for granted our continued massive use of energy. There is no talk of energy descent or economic collapse. The need to decarbonize is acknowledged, but the filmmakers, especially Dr. Tinker, seem comfortable with a 30-year transition period, which includes nuclear and fossil fuels like natural gas. Fukushima, in my opinion, showed nuclear power can destroy a big region, if not a whole country. climate scientists warn we must act now and at least within the next 10, not 30 years, or risk catastrophic climate change. You should know that Dr. Scott Tinker is totally connected with the oil industry. His bio reads, quote, Dr. Tinker worked in the oil and gas industry for 17 years in research, exploration, and development prior to coming to the University of Texas at Austin in 2000, end quote. He is a past president of the American Association of Petroleum Geologists. I find it unlikely a man of his background will suggest we decentralize using totally renewable energy very, very quickly. Teachers who plan to use this film, backed by the industry-friendly American Geosciences Institute, should be ready to encourage students to learn from the breathtaking shots of big power operations, but to question our continued dependence on them. Find out more about this high-energy film, Switch, at www.switchenergyproject.com. That's it for Radio EcoShock this week. I'm Alex Smith. My thanks to our DC correspondent, Jerry Williams. Be sure and join us again next week.